From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It is Super Tuesday. California joins more than a dozen other states in primary races. And if you still have an unopened ballot or you need to register, you still have time. Polls close at 8 p.m. And we do have voter guides for local and statewide races on our Insight page, as well as capradio.org. We're going to narrow in on specific races. We're going to check in with registrars in surrounding counties. And we will have some last minute tips for voters. First, we're going to get a statewide look. Joining us now is CAP Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon and Alexei Kosov, who covers the state capitol for Cal Matters. That is a nonprofit newsroom that partners with public media stations across the state. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you.
So, as state politics reporters, in the weeks leading up to the primary, what has interested each of you most about this election on March 5th? Alexei?
I think, to me, the biggest stakes are this open U.S. Senate seat. We haven't had that in a long time. And so for, you know, the voters of California now to have an opportunity to pick a candidate who will likely be in that seat for decades to come is a very big deal.
It is a once in a generation seat. How about you, Nicole?
I mean, I think also the ballot question, Prop 1, is, I mean, it's the only ballot proposition on this March primary ballot. So, you know, I think the stakes are very high there for Governor Gavin Newsom, for the legislature, who've been trying for years to address this stubborn homelessness problem. And they're really pinning this, the future of that, on this ballot proposition, which would approve $6.4 billion to build 10,000 new beds and housing units for mental health treatment. And, you know, Newsom's called it the last big piece of the puzzle. He says over the past few years, they've been working around the edges, doing all these reforms, and that he says this will tie it all together. But we've seen, you know, support for it kind of diminish in the past few weeks, and turnout is another question.
Yeah, well, let's get to turnout because, I mean, early ballots went out a month ago on February 5th. Political Data Inc. tracks ballot returns across the state. They're reporting 14% of ballots have been returned so far. And given that ballots went out a month ago, I know that the primary historically has lower turnout than the general election, but this, even taking that into consideration, this still seems like really low turnout. What does that signal to you, especially you, Alexei? You've been covering state politics now here in California for like a decade.
Yeah, I mean, this is not good, and there's a possibility that this could end up being a record low. It's still to be determined. I think a lot of people are probably scratching their heads, but certainly one idea that's been floated is that this kind of March primary is just a little too early in the year for California voters to really get engaged and start paying attention and get the information they need to care about the races that are on the ballot. You know, there's sort of that holiday hangover for the first couple weeks, and by the time people are getting their ballots in February, they may not even know what's going on. So I think candidates have been rushing in the last few weeks to try and, you know, catch people's attention and get them to fill out those ballots, and we'll see if there's sort of a surge in late participation today. And then also, I mean, the flip side of the fact that there's only one ballot measure on the ballot and only one big race and no competitive presidential primaries is that there's not a lot for people to really get invested in, even though there are so many important down ballot races. I mean, here in Sacramento, we've got a mayoral race, we've got open seats for the city council, for the legislature. So it's when there's things that are kind of less high profile, they can get lost in the shuffle when there's not those big kind of all-star battles at the top of the ticket to catch people's attention.
Nicole, what stands out to you about the turnout so far?
I think, you know, we always see a last minute rush of people like to wait till that last day. I mean, like, my house dropped our ballots off this morning. That's the norm for a lot of people. They just like to, they'd like to avoid last minute surprises. They like to procrastinate. However, 14% is very low. And I'm looking at the presidential primary turnout from the past 20 years, and it's like 47% in 2020, 48% in 2016, lower 31% in 2012, when, again, there you had a less competitive presidential choices. So, you know, I think we will see a surge, but will it be 30% of voters dropping off their ballots today? I think that remains to be seen.
Nicole, where is Governor Newsom today?
That's a good question. He typically does a public vote at the California Museum. He and the first partner will show up and cast their ballots. They decided not to do that today. And he has been out campaigning since last week for Prop 1. So maybe ran out of energy, I guess.
You know, if it passes or if it doesn't pass, what does this say, if anything, about the governor's political clout in California, Prop 1? Alexi?
I think this is a question that I'm certainly been watching, because one of the last ballot, he's somebody who's actually often tried to pass policy through ballot measures, and he's had some big successes like legal marijuana in 2016 and some gun related initiatives. But he tried a couple years ago to push through a school bond measure, and that narrowly failed. And that was kind of a big surprise. So if this were to fail, I think that would be another big hit to his political capital and question mark about how much the voters of California really trust and listen to him. That said, this one, the polling indicates it's still on track to pass. And I think that maybe speaks to the fact that on an issue like this, people are really fed up. They're looking for new solutions. They're looking for a different path forward. And maybe this is something that the governor is giving them.
Outside of the governor, Nicole, what has the political response been to Prop 1?
That is a good question. I mean, like, you have Newsom and you have the legislative Democrats on one hand really, really pushing this. And the bills in the legislature, you know, this is a ballot question for a bond, but it also includes changes to the Mental Health Services Act, which is 20 years old now. Republicans in the legislature supported that. But as you know, as we talked about, the support for Prop 1 has dwindled in the polls. It was like 66% of voters were supporting it a couple months ago. It's still at polling around 59%, so it's looking like it might pass. But it's normal for support for ballot measures and bonds to drop the closer to election you get. But you also have people questioning whether the state is spending wisely on homelessness. And I think that is a very big concern, maybe the biggest concern when it comes to Prop 1 for voters.
And the devil's in the details. And we're going to dive into Prop 1 later on in the show with our healthcare reporter for people who still need to vote and have unopened ballots. But there are also other local races in the primary. I mean, one of the big local ones in our area is Assembly District 6. That is being vacated by Kevin McCarty, who's running for Sacramento mayor. I mean, there's 10 candidates running in the primary. Nicole, who are you paying attention to in this race?
There's a ton of candidates, and it's a very crowded race. 7 Democrats, 2 Republicans, 1 Peace and Freedom candidate. And the interesting thing about this race is that many of these candidates are already involved in Sacramento's Capitol community. They are working as advocates. They've worked for state lawmakers. They are elected to the local school board or the SMUD board. There's also a lot of outside money that's flown into this race from special interest groups, and that's supporting 2 candidates in particular, Maggie Krell, who's a Democrat working as a deputy attorney general, and Carlos Marquez, who's the executive director of the ACLU of California. So really curious to see if that spending works to elevate either or both of those 2 candidates to the general election, especially in such a crowded field where, you know, breaking through is really what matters for this primary.
Yeah. Alexi, what stands out to you about this race?
I mean, I think in a district like this one, which is overwhelmingly Democratic, I think the biggest question to me is whether 1 or 2 Democrats advance to the top 2, because those 2 Republicans on the ballot could split what's a pretty small amount of registered Republicans in the district and then allow for a very competitive runoff in November. Whereas if only 1 Democrat makes it through because they sort of push ahead of this splintered field, then they pretty much have it sewn up in November. And a lot of Sacramentans are going to be represented by someone they probably didn't even open their ballot to look at this March.
Yeah, I know for the mayor and also city council districts, like local races, some they can be decided on the primary if a candidate gets more than 50% of the vote. Is that the same case for state assembly or state senate, or is it a top 2?
It's a top 2 system, but what happens is that there can be some kind of gamesmanship sometimes with the partisan breakdown of a district. When you're looking at places like the Central Valley, which are very purple and have a very even Republican-Democratic split, then they're very competitive into November. But a lot of other places are drawn so safe for one party or the other that they can end up getting decided in the primary because only one really truly viable candidate makes it through.
You know, Nicole, when it comes to state Senate, I mean, Sacramento voters may not be weighing in on state Senate races, but there are neighboring counties. You have Yolo County. You also have San Joaquin County. What stands out to you about these districts and the races that are happening within them?
Yeah, the two Senate districts that kind of border Sacramento County to the west and to the south are represented by state senators that are term limited. So they're leaving. So you have Democrat Bill Dodd of Napa. And this is a primary, again, where there's five candidates. It's a solidly blue district. It'll be interesting to see if there's three Democrats running, if there are two Democrats that are in these top two. I expect there to be because they've raised a ton of money between the three Democrats and the two Republican challengers haven't raised as much. And then in the fifth Senate district, the incumbent Susan Eggman of Stockton is being termed out. And this is also an interesting race. There's some big names going up against each other. Originally, Edith Villapudua, who's the wife of Stockton Assembly member Carlos Villapudua, was going to run for this seat. The couple decided to switch so that Carlos is running for the Senate. His wife is now running for his Assembly seat. Also at the last minute, former Congressman Jerry McNerney jumped into this race. So these two Democrats have raised a ton of money. They are going up against each other. There's a GOP candidate. We'll see if that Republican candidate, Jim Shoemaker, is a spoiler in this race. But that'll be an interesting one for the primary and into November.
Yeah, that definitely is an interesting race. And Alexi, this isn't the first time that people that live within the same household or family members are running for elected office.
No, absolutely. I think there's a long history. You can see at the Capitol of parents and children, married couples who even serve at the same time in different houses of the legislature, siblings. Actually, right now, there's a pair of sisters who are both in the legislature, and there's another pair of sisters who are trying to get elected to the legislature. So you could say in California, politics is definitely a family business sometimes.
So in my district, I live in the city. And so what I'm voting, I have just been getting so many mailers at my house. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, I should get a bookshelf for all of the mailers. Are mailers effective today? I mean, I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this, because, I mean, it's really a lot, both for and against candidates as well.
I mean, sometimes it's not necessarily the message that's in the mailer as much as the repetition of getting a mailer over and over again and seeing someone's name and just having them stick in your brain so that when you go to your ballot, you look and you look for them. Certainly, that's the idea behind a lot of these kind of low-tech campaign techniques, also like yard signs. I mean, there's an argument that that's not necessarily the most effective use of money, but maybe if you see someone's name enough time, you look them up or you look them on your ballot. Mm.
It is interesting. There's so much money spent on mailers, and nobody really knows how effective they are. Like, I don't think there's been a ton of research into whether they can change anybody's mind. In fact, I've heard people say the opposite and say they're so turned off by the amount of mailers they get for a certain candidate that they don't want to support that candidate.
Yeah.
But again, we don't have a lot of research into
this. Yeah, it's just anecdotal. I know for myself personally, I just think like, oh my gosh, this is wasteful. It's just a lot of paper.
The thing I always actually do when I get them before I toss them in the recycling is I go to see who paid for them, because it's always very interesting to me to see who's so invested in a candidate that they actually feel compelled to pay for this mailer. I mean, it says a lot about relationships and the values of a candidate that they might not state on their website or in the voter guide.
I want to move to the Senate race because, as you mentioned, this is a once-in-a-generation seat. You do have Democrat Adam Schiff, also a Congress member, and Republican Steve Garvey, who doesn't have political experience. I mean, according to polling, at least, they're in a statistical tie. You also have Congress members Katie Porter and Barbara Lee. What stands out to you about how the polling has shifted in the final days and weeks leading up to March 5th? Alexi?
Yeah, well, I mean, this was a race that for a long time people were wondering whether there would be a Democratic runoff essentially in November between Adam Schiff and Katie Porter, two very high profile kind of name Congress people. But Adam Schiff has leaned in hard over the last few weeks on a strategy of running ads that contrast him against Steve Garvey, the Republican candidate, and in doing so kind of elevate Steve Garvey's profile. Garvey has not raised that much money himself. He has not been on the campaign trail that much himself, but he's seen his polling numbers rise and rise and rise and rise, consolidating conservative supporters in California. And so it's been very effective for Adam Schiff to essentially turn it into a race that he's almost guaranteed to win in November.
How does a low turnout benefit a certain candidate, or does it, or even a certain political party by having a low voter turnout?
Well, I think in this case, it would definitely benefit Steve Garvey if the turnout continues to be this low. I mean, the other thing about early voting and turnout is candidates who vote early are more likely to be older. They're more likely to be Republican or conservative leaning. They're more likely to be white voters. And those are the type of voters that are going to support a candidate like Steve Garvey. You have younger voters, voters of color, more Democrats, and Democratic leaning independents are going to vote later. So, you know, again, we don't know if Katie Porter will push through and get enough of those late voting voters to actually turn out and support her. So, yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about having it early. We've talked about turnout being low. And I think all of these things are interesting, you know, variables in this election equation this year.
In the last minute or so that we have, I do want to get to the governor. Obviously, is not running. The governor is rounding out his final term, but his actions and what he is connected to can shape races. So this is why I want to touch on what's been called like Panera Gate. Alexi, can you talk about the controversy it really surrounds over this $20 an hour minimum wage hike that is coming to fast food restaurants in just, I think, a few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big deal that was made at the Capitol last year. It was supposed to settle this tension that's existed between unions and the fast food industry at the Capitol for many years. But in fact, it's actually spurred forward all kinds of new political tensions, including a new PAC by franchise owners of these fast food restaurants who felt left out of the deal. And they're now putting a bunch of money into opposing candidates who supported that deal, including here in Sacramento, Kevin McCarthy, who's running for mayor. They've actually been behind a lot of the mailers and anti-Kevin McCarthy ads that you may have seen. So this is a trend that you're going to continue to see in local races as these business people try and sort of assert their political muscle.
And the reason why it's, how is Panera involved in this? Because that has really received the most coverage in just the last few days.
Right. Well, that's a little bit separate from the election. But the big question I think everyone is trying to unravel right now is whether Gavin Newsom, who does have a longstanding business relationship with a franchise owner who owns many Panera restaurants, actually requested language in the bill that would have exempted Panera through these very technical definitions about what constitutes a fast food restaurant from the $20 minimum wage hike. As this controversy has exploded in the last week, the governor has come out and said, that's absurd, that's not what happened, and Panera is not even exempt. And so now everybody's trying to piece through why this language was even in there in the first place, who did what lobbying and why, and what the ramifications of that are going to be going forward.
At the end of the day, that's why you should vote for the primary, because there are some state offices in both the Assembly and the Senate. I mean, they craft these policies and this legislation. It's very important, and you still have time. Alexi and Nicole, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That is Cap Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon and Alexi Kossoff, who covers the state capitol for Cal Matters. Up next, we're going to dive more into Proposition 1 on the ballot, and we're going to get a look at important local races in Sacramento. And for those of you who still have an unopened ballot, we will have last-minute tips from the California Voter Foundation. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.